Okay, can you guys hear me? Yes, terrific. Thank you. Welcome, Reverend Gloria. Thank you, Ken. Hello to everyone in the room and anyone that might be listening on the radio. I enjoyed your sharing today, Barb. It was, to me, I heard a lot of affirmation in reflection of Regina's sharing that that identity, who am I identifying with? Am I identifying with that I body? It's a reflection of the, you know, thinking, the false self, the personality, the emotions, everything that goes along with I or me or mine. And every time I notice myself speaking those words, watching if I am actually identified with those words, or if I am simply operating in the world. Like for instance, I am under no laws but God's. You had talked about that idea. And of course, in the material world, in the world we seem to live in, we are to pay attention to the laws of the land, so to speak. It's not about, you know, anarchy and craziness, because we are more closely identified with the truth of who we are. And that I is under no laws but God's. It is a reflection of God. And so sometimes, you know, as Regina was sharing, there can be confusion around even that idea of forgiveness. You know, that there's really nothing to forgive when you're that person that has been raped by the uncle, was her example. And, you know, there's that false denial that that activity or that action or that situation happened. You know, we're denying that somehow, you know, you're mistaken and that never happened. And that's not what's being talked about. We're not asked to deny those situations. We're simply asked to remember as quickly and as gracefully as we possibly can, in that moment, if possible, the truth of who I am. That is where the actual safety lies, that for everyone involved. And I remember listening in our gentle healing homework to Byron Katie share that she at some point had been had someone point a gun at her head, and that she was able to stay in that presence of truth of her identity. And so that's obviously a lot of what's been talked about today. And that's the purpose, at least in my mind, of all our practicing, all of our coming together and sharing, all of our reading, all of it is that we become more anchored in truth, not the I body identification or the I mind identification, but the letting go all the personal me, mine, selfishness, and stepping into the truth of who I am. So we've been reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul, and we have left off in, let's see, my mark is on page 90. And this particular piece is called Wisdoms of the Infinite Way. And the Infinite Way is actually the book of Joel S. Goldsmith's, from which Michael Langford extracted these direct path quotes. And this is from chapter 3 in Experience Your Perfect Soul. And again, it's entitled Wisdoms of the Infinite Way. So I'm going to get right into the reading, but first I'm going to take just a quick drink of water. I'm quite thirsty. Okay, so begin your spiritual life with the understanding that all conflicts must be settled within your consciousness. And again, Regina spoke to that this morning in regards to forgiveness. While it seems that some transgression may have occurred, you know, external to ourselves or seems to have been provoked or caused by something someone else may have done or said, the conflict is always in my own mind, always, no matter how it appears or what it seems to be, whether one that started, you know, whatever it is, or whether the seeming other started, whatever is going on, whatever the conflict is. Settling is not about settling it external to myself. It's about owning that it's all going on in my own mind. I'm the one interpreting it. I'm the one deciding to be involved in it. I'm the one embellishing the story, making the story. I'm very active. There's that I body, I mind, I thought process, really whipping it up. So we're told here that, you know, being your spiritual life with the understanding that all conflicts must be settled within your consciousness. When living out from the center of being, you are untouched by the thoughts, opinions, and theories of the world. Nothing acts upon you because you don't react to the world of appearances. And Regina also spoke to that this morning. She said, you know, when we notice ourselves maybe sucked into some sort of a drama, don't get on the phone and then, you know, share that drama with, you know, your best bud or your, you know, your sister or your, you know, your friend, or, you know, don't, you know, share that. That's more identification with, of course, what might be my opinion about it or my reaction to it or what seemed to happen or my theory about, you know, why I think they said that, or thoughts about why I reacted this way, or my opinion in justification for feeling this way. I mean, we can go on and on and on with those distractions. And this is saying to us that when we're living out from the center of being, when we're more closely identified and more readily identified because of our practices and our intense desire for liberation becomes stronger, when we're living out from that center of being, we're untouched by those thoughts, opinions, and theories of the world. They may still appear as a thought in the mind, but we more easily dismiss that. Let it go. Notice it and give it no never mind. Or you know, Regina talks about, you know, where she sometimes will notice something and sit and has in the past said, you know, I see you. Or, you know, where it's like, ah, I noticed that recurring habitual way of maybe attaching to this old grind, for instance, and deciding in that moment, no, I don't have to anymore. So again, it goes on to say, nothing acts upon you because you don't react to the world of appearances. Prayer is an awareness of that which is by, and this is in quotes and italicized, seeing it, not making it so. So again, prayer is an awareness of that which is by seeing it, not making it so. Yeah. And I think last week we read prayer is meditation. And what are we trying to do in meditation but fully connect with the truth of who we are, the seer? There may be seeing occurring in consciousness, but we're not attached to what's being seen. We're not attached to the objective aspect of that. We may have a thought arise. We may have a feeling arise. We may have a sensation arise. We may have a body pain arise. We may have, you know, many things arise. But we're resting in the seeing of it and turning our seeing towards the seer. The one that's unaffected, completely unaffected. And it's saying prayer is an awareness of that which is by seeing it, not making it so. Rest in the deep, clear well of contentment within you. Peace already is. The cool, clear water of the well of contentment within refreshes you with the assurance that joy already is. Peace, be still. Be not dismayed. It is I. And again, this is not the I that was, you know, spoken of, Robert Adams was speaking of when he was helping us to look at the identification of body I, mind I, thought I, me I, mine I, what I want, my opinion, my thought. My personality, my, all that. That's Maya, that's illusion, untruth. But in this peace, be still, in this cool, clear water of the well of contentment within, where we're refreshed, assured. And Regina spoke about in the reading this morning where we're assured, completely assured, that the truth of who we are is this undismayed I, the I am. Again, we're told, be not dismayed. It is I, as Regina calls it, awareness, life, presence. I as love, bliss, awareness, presence. There's no dismay when we rest there. So men, judging by human standards, complain that prayer is not answered. To benefit from prayer, it is necessary to give up all personal concepts of good. Do not try to fit answered prayer into the mold of human desire. truth is infinite. Therefore, truth cannot be known in finite terms. Life is not at the mercy of matter. So even when we take a situation like the hurricane in Texas, where it appears that those that are in the pathway, the direct pathway of the hurricane and have been affected in some way, shape, or form by that, by the mercy of the destruction of the hurricane. This is saying to us, life or presence or truth or awareness, consciousness, is unaffected. And never at mercy of any form of matter, any I identification. It's unaffected. Life is not at the mercy of matter. Any response on a lower plane than pure consciousness is from oneself, little s, rather than one's self, big S. So again, any response on a lower plane than pure consciousness. So again, we're still operating from consciousness. But if it's from a response from a lower plane would be from a state of consciousness that's identified with a personal me. I think. I need to behave in this way, act this way, help in this way, not help in this way. I think, should, acting without any asking whatsoever, just deciding. This is what I do. Completely identifying with, all of my history, all of my past, all of what I think I know, all of that. That's response from a lower plane. Response from less than, that pure consciousness, because my attention isn't focused on pure consciousness. It's focused away from it. Still using it. But the direction of the attention is away from the purity. And so, how can I notice that? Well, how do I feel? What are the results? What are the effects? So withdraw from personal consciousness as rapidly as possible. That's the deal. As soon as we notice, drift into, a thought story or a drama, or I'm repeating a story or whatever it might be, any form of attention away from truth. Withdraw from that personal consciousness as rapidly as possible. Let I die. Happiness or unhappiness in human existence, what does it matter? What does it matter? Really, what does it matter? Is there anyone, here in this room or listening on the radio, that when we're in existing in the lower plane of consciousness, where the duality of happiness and unhappiness seems to be a fact, does anyone really feel a total sense of security when that happiness is occurring? Or is there, maybe not, you know, right away in the mind, but on some level, there's that, when is the shoe going to drop? I don't deserve this. Yeah, I'm happy now, but it's probably not going to last. Because we know from direct experience in the world, it doesn't. When we're identified on the lower plane from small self consciousness. And that's why we are engaged in practices that are leading us away from that. Because that's never, ever, ever going to be where true happiness, constant happiness, this state where Jesus not only says to us in A Course in Miracles, it's not just a temporary happiness, it's a perfect happiness. It's not just a sometimes happiness, it's an always happiness. That consciousness. That's why we engage in awareness, watching awareness practice, turning away from these responses, these thoughts, these stories, this habitual tendency to become entrapped in objective reality. Quote, I say reality. It's not real at all. And we're training. It's a mind training through practice. Not to leave our attention there. Not to let those responses go unchecked. This is sharing with us that happiness or unhappiness in human existence, does it matter? And then the next line I'm going to read to you is all in italics. Happiness must be known of the spirit. Let divine love engulf you. Be at peace in my peace. And the my is italicized. Be at peace in my peace. You know, not a temporary peace. Comes and goes. Not one that's easily disturbed because I didn't like the tone of your voice, the way you said that, the way you looked at me. Not that piece. Oh, God. Life beyond the grave has no relationship to immortality. Again, life beyond the grave has no relationship to immortality. Life beyond the grave is but the survival of personality. This personality dies. It must die either this side or that side of the grave in order that immortality may be realized. And Regina spoke to this, the idea of the personality. And I cannot remember. I think it was maybe in her her Bible class. What's it called? It's like a soap opera name. It's escaping me at the moment. I think that's where I heard her speak to that, but I could be wrong. But she was talking about the personality, how we're so identified with our personality as, you know, who we are. Again, one of those aspects of identification feel near and dear. My personality, for instance, would probably be viewed as more outgoing, more talkative, lots of things, I could go on and on and on, but things that I identify with as who I am. And when we take that into inquiry, you know, does that have anything to do that my personality traits and qualities and, you know, quirks and characteristics and weirdnesses, and does that have anything to do with the truth of who I am? Does awareness have a personality, or is it empty? So if I somehow think that, you know, Kathy is talkative, or, you know, like I said, outgoing, or swears, or can be loud, or can be sulky, or can be crabby, or can be, does that have anything to do with who I really am? At all. Or any of those, you know, personalities that I see external to myself. Am I attached? How much value, Regina talked about value this morning. How much value am I placing on someone else's personality? And my insistence that this is who they are. Do I value that over forgiveness, which in her sharing this morning, my understanding was that forgiveness is the recognition of awareness, life presence. And anything beyond that, any fluff beyond that, whether it's, you know, the personality I'm just sharing, the attachment to the personality traits, the attachment to the I, the attachment to me, mine, my body, my opinions, all the things we read about here, all those, you know, relationships I have with the false identification, how often am I engaged with that? And I'm simply being asked to go beyond that, realize what's going on. That there is a life beyond the grave that has no relationship to immortality. Look for that life. Which is awareness. Awareness, life, presence. I mean, there's, you know, many words we use, but focus, refocus back in that direction. Life beyond the grave is but the survival personality. this personality dies. It must die, either this side or that side of the grave, in order that immortality may be realized. The immortal self is ever present, and that's in all italics. The immortal, capital S, self is ever present, hyphen, ever, hyphen, present. The immortal self is ever clothed with personality. You know, that's the fluff, the clothing of personality. But is revealed and lived only in proportion as personality or the human selfhood disappears. I'm none of those beliefs about myself. I'm none of ideas about a separate self. None of it. Ever. So one more time, the immortal self is ever present, even when clothed with personality, but is revealed and lived only in proportion as personality or the human selfhood disappears. Prayer is not an activity of the human mind. To know that one has been functioning in the dream is the beginning of the awakening. When thought dwells on person, place, or thing, you are functioning in the dream. You know, it's the dwelling, you know, because we will have thoughts occur about and functions that seem more important, that we value more than simply staying in presence. It's the dwelling that's the problem. And our practice, again, takes us away from that dwelling place. We become, you know, quicker at returning to being in the presence of awareness, being that open channel through which awareness, which is ever present, flows. We're just the willing, we just let it go. We just go and be still with it. Speak when spoken through, you know, be willing to be still. Rather than react. So these things we perceive with the five senses are objects of mind with no relationship to truth. All that is objectively witnessed must be understood to be mental images or mind projections, never spiritual reality. Sense world, human experience, takes place in time and space, and this in itself precludes it's being spiritual in nature. And this next piece is called The New Horizon. The first glimpse of reality, or the soul realm, comes with the recognition and realization of the fact that all temporal conditions and experiences are products of self-hypnotism. Yeah. One of the definitions of enlightenment that I've always liked is from A Course in Miracles, and it says, enlightenment is but a recognition, not a change at all. Not a change at all. And that unchangeable aspect that we're speaking of is awareness or consciousness or life presence or reality or the soul realm. And this is saying to us, the glimpse of that comes when we recognize the fact that all conditions that seem to occur in time and space, all experiences we've ever experienced, they're products of self-hypnotism. It's all happening in my own mind, my own imagination. I'm making it up as I go along through thinking and belief in the thinking. And then hypnotized by the external objective human experience in a relative world into believing that's true as well. And separate from me, of course. But this is saying there does come a recognition, there does come a realization of the fact that it's not true. That the shifting and the changing and the progression of time and the uncertain nature and the shaky foundation and the uncertainty and the all of that are clues. It cannot be of truth, which is stable and unchanging and always only itself, empty, void of, you know, all this other stuff we're speaking of, simply empty. So we behold ourselves separate and apart from the bondage of sense. And in a measure, we glimpse the unlimited boundaries of eternal life and of infinite consciousness. Hallelujah, amen. The fetters of finite existence begin to fall away. The experience at first is like watching the world disappear over a horizon and drop down from before us. There is no attachment to this world, no desire to hold onto it, probably because to a great extent, the experience does not come until a great measure of our desire for the things of, quote, this world, unquote, has been overcome. You know, at some, and this is just my sense of it, there's some sense of enough experiences having occurred that we have maybe just a tiny glimpse of, you know, this is not for me. I desire a more constant joy, a more perfect happiness, stepping into this truth that I really am. I want and desire intensely to be liberated from any sense of suffering that is a result of listening to that thought process, the invention, believing in the self-hypnotism, any of that stuff. You know the deal. there's at least a willingness to move away from that. Earth ties begin to disappear. Shackles of limitation fall away. Erroneous conditions give place to spiritual harmony. Death gives way to eternal life. We are not bound by the evidence of the physical senses. We are tied by visible concepts of time or space. Our good is flowing from the infinite, visible, invisible realm of spirit, soul, to our immediate apprehension. Again, our good is flowing from the infinite, invisible realm of spirit, soul, to our immediate apprehension. Let us not judge our good by any so-called sensible evidence. Let us not judge our good by any so-called sensible evidence. No good is withheld from us as we look above the physical evidence to the great invisible. And that's capitalized. It makes me think of the instruction meditations. One of the instruction meditation, awareness meditations, speaks to, you know, when we are in that empty space of awareness, there may be that the noticing of the tendency to have the question, you know, now what come up? Now what? As if something beyond that emptiness should be occurring or happening. There should be something more. Now what? There's nothing beyond. There isn't anything else. It's simply empty. Empty awareness, into rest in the empty awareness. Simply be there. Let there be no desire to be more than that. Don't be bound by some sort of evidence when we find ourselves in empty awareness. Don't be bound and return to the, you know, the binding of this idea of some sort of evidence of the physical senses. I should have, you know, some sort of mystical experience, or there should be something going on in my, behind my eyes that I could, that's just going to be lovely, or there's just going to be some sort of bodily sensation, or there should be something. That's looking to add more. It doesn't, you know, become just that pure empty awareness, just awareness itself, awareness aware of itself. We've slipped back into more, which, you know, that's what the ego always wants. More. It doesn't care more of what. It just wants more of something. So So again, we're being told, don't look for good by any so-called sensible evidence. No good thing is withheld from us as we look above the physical evidence to the great invisible. No good thing is withheld from us. But if we're not looking beyond our own constricted definition of what good is, and we're staying stuck in the restriction of physical evidence, which is bound by its very nature, we never will find the great invisible. We never find the good, the true goodness, the true that's beyond a present understanding. We somehow think that, you know, that unlimited perfect happiness is being withheld from us now. And it is being withheld from us now when our attention is still focused looking for physical evidence or some sort of an experience or some sort of something, some fluff in empty awareness. Something familiar in empty awareness, something I seem to already know. And here we're being told, you know, it's the exact opposite. Don't look for the good, you know, in those experiences, that stuff. That's just adding more. That's just the block. No good thing is withheld from us as we look above the physical evidence to the great invisible. I, and this I, throughout this whole next piece that I'm going to share with you, is italicized. I am breaking the sense of limitation for you as an evidence of my presence. And the my is italicized. It's like, here's the deal, guys. I am breaking the sense of limitation for you as an evidence. There's the evidence of my presence and of my influence in your experience. I, the I of you, am in the midst of you, revealing the harmony and infinity of spiritual existence. I, the I of you, never a personal sense of I, never a person, the I of you, am ever with you. And this you as well, this you as well, is not speaking to a personal you. It's not speaking to the personal I. It's speaking to the truth of you. And there's a recognition within all of us, whether we're conscious of it or not, there's a resonance that's inescapable, unavoidable, true, real. And this is where the resting comes in. We're being told here, this I of myself, this truth of myself.
Good morning, everyone. And
I am breaking the sense of limitation for you as an evidence of my presence and of my influence in your experience. I, the I of you, am in the midst of you, revealing the harmony and infinity of spiritual existence. I, the I of you, never a personal sense of I, never a person, but the I of you am ever with you. And to me, that's like comforting. That's such a comforting, reassuring, uplifting sharing, affirming the truth of who I am. It's not an I separate from a me that I'm accepting as I am. It's the truth. It's simply stepping into that, owning that, living that, being that, not just reading about that. Yeah. Okay, I see that it is 11:22. And let's see what I might do. End of that particular section. I don't know that I want to start the next section because it is a new section, and it was actually my initial inspiration for picking up Experience Your Perfect Soul came about as a result of this new section, which is Chapter 4, Catherine Piedrick. Regina had been reading from Catherine Piedrick at the end of a prayer circle session, and I had just, I didn't catch all of the prayer circle, but I did catch the sharing of her reading from, and it was a heart thumper for me. And so I paid attention to the heart thump and purchased at the time what I thought to be a Catherine Piedrick book. And it turned out to be a Michael Langford book. And here I am, I don't know, a couple of years later, still reading this book. And so because this is a new section and one that I really loved a lot, I'm going to refrain from starting it. And so we are ending on page 94. And I'm going to see if I can quickly go to my to some music. I see that I dropped the mic there for a second, so just be patient with me, guys. I'm technologically challenged most of the time. So let's see here. Let me see. Okay, guys, this is, I got it. This is, are you still there with me? Is anybody here? It took me a while. This, it should be perfect because this music is going to last about 5 minutes, and there's no words to the music, so just sit back in it. It's a kid in the subway playing a simple instrument, and I absolutely love it. So here we go. It. you can hear the subway in the background. This is just a kid playing an instrument that looks like a flying saucer, actually. It's about the size of a, you know, a good-sized turtle, and it has holes in it, and it's like, it's, I think it's called a han, H-A-N. I don't know if that's how you really pronounce it, but I just absolutely love this kid, and I listen to this sometimes for meditation, and he's sitting in the subway in New York in Queens, and yes, that's it, exactly, exactly. It's just a wonderful thing. But at any rate, if you get a chance, check it out on the Facebook page. It's beautiful. Okay, guys, thanks for joining with me. I'm releasing the mic, and everybody have a beautiful Sunday. Thank you for sharing this time with me.